Welcome to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. Here are your hosts, Jeff Carrier and Seth Lull.
Welcome, everyone, to the NFL Talking Heads Fantasy Football Podcast Show. I'm your host, Jeff Carrier. By my side is Seth Lull, and we are back for Week 15 of the Fantasy Football Playoffs. Seth, it is time. We're in the semis. This is what we've been working for all year. I've had a loyal listener group all year. We appreciate everyone for listening, tuning in and week out. We are coming down to the last couple of weeks for the fantasy season. Hopefully, we have a lot of people that are at the very least in contention to be walking away with the title. That is all you can ask for at this point with all the hard work we have put in. And Seth, I figured, week in, week out, we talk a little bit about decisions that we have to make, and sometimes I throw some at you, like I have to choose between these players and my flex, and same for you. So let's take a quick recap on the current state of the NFL Talking Heads leagues. As it sits, I am sitting in our, we have three main leagues that we play year in and year out. We did add one or two this year. The three main leagues, I happen to be in the semifinals in again, same as last year. So I think everyone, as usual, legitimately hates me. But you yourself as well are in three semifinals. And of course, two out of those three leagues that were each in the semifinals, we are playing each other.
Yep. So two incredibly, this will be a really stressful weekend. Two pretty intense matchups against you. I mean, it's almost like, and I always tell you this, like I would rather you lose than me win most of the time. Like if I could choose, Jeff, you know, both of us lose, but Jeff loses or I win. I think I'd rather I get more enjoyment out of you losing than me winning. So I'm not sure how healthy that is, but it definitely makes the matchups that much more stressful. And I think I'm actually projected to lose in both matchups. So. This I'm already bracing myself for. This is going to be a rough weekend. I just need to have that mindset going into it, so I'm not, you know, getting my hopes up.
We both handle, obviously, the matchups very differently. You are usually a little bit more optimistic on your matchups when you're actually going through it, or at least a lot more objective than I am. Me, as you like to call me out a lot, I could be up by 100 points and still feel like I'm going to lose for some reason. But projections are only projections, so I'm obviously not going to get – either of us are not going to get ahead of ourselves. I think that for our – own sake at home, though, we should probably give a fair warning to our wives so that way they can make plans to be out of the household on Sunday.
And, you know, maybe Saturday, too, because there are Saturday games this weekend.
Saturday games, right.
First and Saturday games of the season.
There is nowhere to go. They're going to be extremely happy at the end of this offseason. Now, this brought up a question to myself, Seth. Last year, again, we met in semis in our hometown league, which is usually most people's, like, the biggest pride league that you want to win. And I go on to lose to you. You end up winning the championship. Either one of us would have won the following week with the points scored. That's how it goes. I don't know if the other dynasty league that I had won, we played in the semis or not. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe we played in the first round. Why do we play in the same leagues together? It's just we like to make it that much harder for ourselves.
Apparently, we should just come to some sort of agreement where we agree to split the winnings so we have two chances at getting some payouts. But, yep, but like you said, it's our hometown league. We've been in it for, I think, over 10 years at this point. So, you know, pride, it's, you know, there's money, but there's also, you know, this pride. We want to beat our hometown buddies, and we want to beat each other probably more than we want to beat anybody. So, you know, that definitely adds something to it. And you got to have it's not fun to do fantasy just for money. I mean, you and I we entered a couple leagues this year, mainly just for money, where we managed together. And it's not as fun as being in a league. Like, I'd rather be in a, like, it's like you get more juiced, more amped up for, you know, a $50 league when I'm playing you in the playoffs than I would in a, you know, a $200, $300 league where I'm playing a complete stranger. So
yeah, it's kind of crazy. So hopefully everyone is looking forward to their matchups this weekend. We are going to be breaking down all of the important decisions, and there are a lot of them in week 15 of the semifinals. And then Seth, as I mentioned, you know, we'll be after the final week of the championship weekend. We might have one episode, and then hopefully we'll have a little bit of our break for ourselves. It's been definitely a long season working with the Talking Heads Nation, the private group message, the nonstop great guests that we had on this year. Everyone from Michael Fabiano, Field Yates, Christopher Harris, and so on and so forth. So we, as a little, I guess, behind the curtain, continuously work on side projects, other stuff that we like to do and work on, you know, keep ourselves, I guess, busy on the side, stay creative. And one of the things that you're in the middle of right now is you're creating some new music. Seth is a singer, songwriter, musician, I guess. And you just put out a 3-song EP. Is that right?
Yep. Put out a 3-song EP that I recorded throughout August and October. Put it out towards the end of November, so it's available everywhere. Spotify, iTunes, you name it, everywhere. It's called Everything to Lose. 3 songs. Wrote all 3 songs this spring. I always wrote songs like growing up and in high school and like in college. I was always writing songs, but then, you know, once we got into the real world, I stopped. You know, it was like 6 or 7 years passed, and I wasn't really writing anything. So just earlier this year, I kind of picked it back up, and I'm like, yeah, I should probably just do something with this before it gets to be too late, you know, while I'm still young and all that. So this spring, I really started writing several songs. So I put out the EP, Everything to Lose, and I'm in the process of writing material for an upcoming album, which I'm hoping to release in the spring. Which should have, 10 to 12 new songs on it as well. So definitely keeps me busy on the side.
Awesome. And I hope everyone picked up on something that you said, because for us, you know, people who can't play a musician, and I'm big into music, you know that. I talk about all the shows I go to. You'll make fun of me. Oh, you going to another show this weekend? And I love music, but I can't play. And I definitely cannot sing. My wife says I sound like a deaf person when I attempt to sing. So, but you know, watching, or I guess, you know, seeing someone that can play music and then you drop it for 6 to 7 years, it's like, oh, God dang, I wish I had that skill, that asset. So it's good that you're picking that back up. Let's go ahead and play just a quick sound bite before we get to week 15, breaking it down. I thought it'd be cool to, you know, again, showcase a little bit of other stuff that we're working on. So here's just a quick middle part of one of the songs that Seth wrote called After You. And Seth, that's a little sneak peek to the song. And what we'll do is we'll play that song actually in its entirety at the end. So if you guys do want to hear that full song, I'll play it at the end. And as Seth mentioned, you can get it on iTunes, even Spotify, everywhere where I guess there is music. And why don't you give us a little bit of an idea or insight in terms of how that song was put together?
Yeah, I mean, usually I think, and I consider myself like a songwriter. Like I'm not the best guitarist. I'm not a John Mayer. I'm not the best singer in the world, but I think I'm a pretty good songwriter. And as songwriters, you like when you put together songs, you always put together bits and pieces of songs. And I started coming up with, the first thing I did is I came up with the beginning, the finger picking, the doom, 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 doom. And I was just like, you know, just playing around with it. It's like, whatever. And then I came up with the chorus. I was actually like, so I have a 2-year-old, and my wife and my kid were sleeping. So the only place I could go to play where I wouldn't wake them up is in the bathroom. So like I went and was playing the guitar in the bathroom, and I was just like singing, and I came up with the chorus. And then right after the chorus, I just went into that guitar part, and then I was like, all right, I have something. And then from there, it's just I knew I had to come up with a verse. So usually it's either I have the verse first and then I just need the chorus, or you know, I have the chorus already, and then I got to come up with a verse that goes with it. So, you know, like it kind of came up with, you know, both parts separate, and then the middle part, right after that solo in the song, I came up with it when I was actually in the car driving, just like singing, and I was like, oh wow, this would kind of go good with it. So, usually it's, you know, you can't just sit down and say, okay, I'm going to write a song. Like it never works like that. You just got to like, usually it just comes when you're not expecting it, or when you're just playing around. So otherwise, it comes across as forced. So I came up with that, and then a couple of the other ones I came up with right after. Like usually, you know, when you write a song, you write a bunch of them at once. It's like when it rains, it pours, and then like you go through like several years when like nothing will come to my mind. So it's usually one or the other. So it's kind of trying to ride out the momentum, and which is what I'm trying to do with the album too. Is I'm trying to right now. I already have 10 songs written. It's just I got to finish the lyrics, because with songwriters, I feel like we always have like a ton of different songs at any given time. They're just never finished, and I have like 10 to 12 songs. They're all like 50% done. So.
Good stuff there, good insight. And if you really want to dig deeper into some of Seth's even really older stuff before this new stuff, you won't find it on Spotify, but you can find it on Bandcamp, and you can listen to it for free on there. And
you actually wrote that. You actually wrote one of the lines in one of the songs too. So,
yep. Back when I was trying to pretend to be, I guess, anything, whatever than I was, I'm. Real quick funny story is, and I don't know if I've ever told you this, Seth, before, and this is why me and Seth always love to, our favorite saying to each other is, I hate you. I hate you so much. And just for whatever else that we do that's good or exceptional that the other person can't do, whatever it might be. And I remember being in college, and my now wife, we were having a discussion on choosing people, Seth. And I don't remember the context of it, but it's like, okay, all right, would it be Seth or would it be this other guy, this person, you know, in terms of maybe being better looking something? I have no idea. But I remember the whole reason that she chose Seth was because you could play guitar. And I'm just like, oh, God dang it, Seth, I hate you so much. So that being said, some pretty cool stuff there. We'll play the ending or the rest of the song at the end of this episode. Now let's get into some fantasy football talk, Seth. Big week into fantasy. We're going to get some people back from injuries. We're going to get someone back from suspension. And one of the first games I want to look at that I think has a lot of implications across the board is the Green Bay-Carolina game for a couple reasons. The biggest is obviously Aaron Rodgers. Now, I know it's early in the week, but everything I've been able to read so far, to me, is that he is not going to play. They said it's around 50-50, and his collarbone is not 100% healed. However, they didn't anticipate it to be fully healed in the first place. And with them being on the outside looking in on the playoffs, there's, you know, they have to value the risk of re-injuring the collarbone with Aaron Rodgers, with knowing the fact that, one, not only are they not going to have a home playoff game, they might not even make the playoffs. So, and this is a tough game, because if Brett Hundley starts and they're in Carolina, Carolina is a pretty good defense, I think, to start, and obviously this goes back to devaluing Jordy Nelson. So I think there's a lot of things to factor in this game if Aaron Rodgers plays or does not play.
Yeah, I mean, Green Bay pretty much has to win out. I mean, the NFC, this is a really good year for the NFC. 10-6 might not even cut it. So they need to win out, and they need to get some help along the way. They are playing Carolina, which is one of those teams that they, you know, they're going to be competing with for a wild card spot. And, you know, maybe the Wentz injury factors into all this. You know, with Wentz now out for the season, Philadelphia realistically is not a, you know, they could still go to the Super Bowl because they have a good, well-rounded, balanced team, but they're by no means the clear-cut favorite. And maybe Green Bay looks at it and says, you know, we need to get Rodgers in here because if we get to the playoffs, anything can happen. And if he re-injures his collarbone, it's not like it's going to be career-threatening. They still have the entire offseason. I mean, I'm not a doctor, but he'd have plenty of time to recover from the collarbone injury to be ready for training camp, I would assume. So if you own Rodgers, regardless, if you own Rodgers, you're playing him. If you don't own Rodgers and he's available, I think he's worth picking up because he comes back in, he should be fine. So it's just a matter of whether or not he's going to go, and you'll have to, you know, be following Adam Schefter's Twitter page, Ian Rapoport's Twitter page, and, you know, be keeping a close eye on that.
Okay, and real quick question. If Aaron Rodgers does not start, are you likely or are you inclined to sit Jordy Nelson?
Yep. No Aaron Rodgers, no Jordy Nelson. I've been saying for a couple weeks now, I don't think you can start Jordy Nelson. Like I said that against, you know, for Cleveland, you know, even given the matchup, you can't start Jordy. It's all Devontae Adams, which is really weird. Devontae Adams is completely matchup proof without Rodgers, and Jordy Nelson is just one of those players that you just can't start him no matter what.
Yep, it is kind of crazy to think that Devontae Adams' value goes down if Rodgers comes back, but as of right now, that's the case. Let's go ahead and pivot to the Philly and Giants game, going off of your comments about Carson Wentz. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but did Nick Foles not step in as the Eagles' backup quarterback at some point and go like 27-2, you know, for half the season or something like that? Who was injured in front of him?
Was that the year that Sam Bradford got injured? Or was that the year?
Was it Michael Vick? Was it that far ago, long ago?
Yes, it was. It was Michael Vick, because that was when Chip Kelly was here, right? When he was the coach here, as if I was like.
So I think it was Michael Vick, right?
So it was Michael Vick, and I believe that was 2000, and I think that was 2013, right? So he played 13 games. So Vick went down early, and then the following year he played 8 games. The following year he didn't play so good. But I mean, this is a guy who is 56 touchdowns, 27 interceptions. I mean, he has some game. I mean, he had a couple really good years in Philly. He's got a good offensive team around him in terms of, you know, just solid receivers. They got a good running back. They got a really good offensive line. So if Nick Foles is available, and I don't know about you, but I'm picking him up and I'm starting him this week. And I think he's probably a top 10 quarterback in fantasy this week. He's been in the system all year.
By the way, I looked up his touchdown to interception ratio off the top of my head. I just looked it up. He did go 27-2. Man, I have a good memory.
That was an insane year.
Now let's play. You know, the normal game we have here. I agree. I think that Nick Foles is definitely a starting caliber play here in Week 15, especially against the Giants. However, there are obviously a lot of other options that I might want to go with instead. So let's go ahead and bounce some of those off. I'm going to start off with someone I think this is an easy one. Case Keenum or Nick Foles?
You're going Case Keenum.
Yeah, you have to. Okay. All right. I just want to set the...
Especially after what Mitch Trubisky just did going into Cincinnati.
Good point. You're going to start Dak. You're going to start probably – now, here's a good one maybe. Jameis Winston?
I'm still going Jameis.
Okay.
I'm still going Jameis. I also think with quarterbacks, a lot of it comes down to do you need the upside or do you just need the sure points? Because with Winston, he has more upside, no doubt about it. I do think – and I guess he's safer too, so that's a bad example. But I think Nick Foles is pretty safe. It's just – it's different when the quarterback makes his first start than when he comes in relief of the starter.
Very different. Okay, you're gonna start Matt Ryan. I would have to take it, especially against that Tampa Bay defense. That one's
really close though, because it is in Tampa.
Please don't tell me you're gonna give Tampa's defense that much credit.
No, I'm not. But I'm just not that big a fan of Matt Ryan this season. He's just been very average. So
I agree. Yeah, but I mean, I would go Matt Ryan.
I think that's closer though. But
no, I know I'm working my way towards Nick Foles here. We still have to remember that it is Nick Foles, and they had a lead, you know, when he came in, so they were able to play very optimal offensive play calling, not get behind and get one dimensional. Kirk Cousins, you still going to roll Kirk Cousins out there?
Nope, I'm going to go Nick Foles.
Really?
Unless Jordan Reed plays, Kirk Cousins has nobody to throw to. He lost Byron Marshall. I don't know if he's going to play or not, which you wouldn't think would be a big deal. It's Byron Marshall, who he actually even knows who he is.
I know. What are you even saying right now?
But he has no Chris Thompson, no Terrell Pryor. He's really only has Josh Doctson and Jameson Crowder to throw the ball to. Vernon Davis is just he dropped it. What would have been a touchdown this week? I don't know. I've seen enough from Chris. That's close. I don't love the matchup against Arizona. I still think I'm going Nick Foles against the juicy matchup against the Giants. I mean, let's not forget about Nick Foles too. I mean, he went to St. Louis right from Philly, where he had Jeff Fisher. And shocking, that was the one season that he had 7 touchdowns, 10 picks. Then he throws three touchdowns. Yeah, I can't even talk right now. 3 touchdowns, 0 picks in KC. I like Nick Foles a lot. He's been one of the better backups. So I like him.
Well, he's definitely getting lightning strikes twice for him. So not too many people can get this kind of opportunity once. He's getting it twice. So this is obviously going to be huge for him, because he can obviously look for a additional payday as a backup or potential starter somewhere else. All right, let's hone down on this, because Nick Foles is such a big topic, because he's going to be available on everyone's waivers here. I think I would still lean Kirk Cousins for two reasons. One is he's at home. Two is that I don't think the game flow is going to get out of hand with Arizona. I don't think that they're going to get immensely ahead the way that Dallas did and turn the Redskins one-dimensional. So I don't love it. And as much as I love the Giants matchup, I still want to go Kirk Cousins, just a little bit better quarterback I have to rely in. Mm-hmm. Matt Stafford or Nick Foles?
Matt Stafford home against Chicago. I'm going to go Matt Stafford.
Okay, you got to go Matt Stafford. Some of these are really tough. I still think through sheer volume that you still have to go with Detroit and Stafford at home. Then here's where I think you start hitting the zone of you can definitely go with Nick Foles, because not only is his floor about as good as all of these next ones, but his upside is tremendously higher, better than the Broncos quarterback, the Colts quarterback, Joe Flacco.
You're starting him over probably. I mean, I would start him over Derek Carr probably. I would start him over, the Mariota.
I would start him over Derek Carr and Mariota. Yes, that's probably the zone there that a lot of people are going to
be. Here's a good one. What about Jared Goff going into Seattle?
I'm sorry, Jared Goff.
I agree. I think it is close, though, because it's an in-division game on the road. Seattle's coming off a loss.
Oh,
Seattle
absolutely.
Needs this game.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't disagree whatsoever, but I don't know if I'll be able to live with myself knowing that Jared Goff has been good, very good week in and week out. How about Jimmy Garoppolo at home against Tennessee?
That's a coin flip for me. I do like Jimmy Garoppolo a lot. I mean, I'm going to go Nick Foles just because I trust him to get the ball into the end zone more than Garoppolo.
He's got a better team around him.
He does. He's been a starter in the past. He's got a really good team around him, and he's playing a really bad defense. So, I mean, I could see Nick Foles throw him for 2 or 3 touchdowns this weekend. So I'm going Nick Foles. And a lot of these other ones are really close, too. Like, if I had to start Foles over Keenum, it wouldn't kill me. I think you clearly go Keenum. Same thing with Goff, though. I think a lot of these are somewhat close. Cousins, I mean, we disagree on him. Matt Ryan, I think, is really close. Alex Smith is another one I would start Foles over. I think Stafford's fairly close. I mean, there are a lot of close ones this week that are head and shoulders above Nick Foles.
There are a lot of close ones, but ones where you probably still want to lean towards Stafford because, how many more points is Nick Foles' upside, higher than Stafford's realistic range of outcomes,
That's the thing. And you mentioned we talked about Jared Goff, and you said you wouldn't be able to live with yourself if you started Foles over him. And I agree. If you're in the playoffs, Jared Goff got you here. You're not going to bench him. There's not enough upside to be gained from Nick Foles to justify taking that risk. You know, if this was – if he was playing Cleveland at home and we saw him already have, you know, one start under his belt where he lit it up, then maybe you make that move. But we haven't seen him start yet this year. He is on the road. So, yeah, I agree. You go with – you clearly go with Jared Goff there in the –
Here are the ones that you should start him over, and then we can kind of move on from this big topic, though, why we spend so much time on it. I would say Denver, Indianapolis, Cincinnati, Arizona, the Jets, Houston, Tennessee, Oakland.
Miami-Buffalo,
Cleveland. Cincinnati. I already said Cincinnati, Cleveland. I think you have to start Nick Foles over all of them, right?
In the Giants, Eli, you're starting him over Eli.
In the Giants,
yep. Yeah, okay. And then a lot of those are, and then a lot of those are really close too. A lot of the other ones are super close. We said Jacksonville, right? So Jacksonville. What about? And again, we don't have to spend forever on Nick Foles, but what about Cam Newton? I mean, pretty good matchup. I'm assuming you're still probably starting Cam Newton.
Yeah. Because again, Cam Newton's low range of outcome is still going to be relatively high on the Nick Foles range of outcome. So, okay, so that's Nick Foles in a nutshell. I know we just spent a lot of time on that, but he's going to be available for everyone. And even if you don't need him, just go ahead and grab him. Right, Seth? That's the strategy here. Just remove the opportunity for any opponents to have him.
Yeah, if you have a high waiver order, or a higher waiver order than the other people in the playoffs, or you have more fab budget, whatever system you have, you always want to be aware of what needs and weaknesses your opponent has. Because, for example, if I'm playing somebody and I see that they're starting Andy Dalton against Minnesota, I know that they're going to be in the market for someone like Nick Foles. And I don't want them to start Nick Foles against me. I want them to start Dalton going into Minnesota. So I'm going to go and I'm going to try and get Nick Foles with everything that I have, because that's the exact same thing as if I needed Foles. You want to beat your opponent. So,
You're wasting your first. I don't care if you have the first overall for some reason. You're wasting that pick on him. I can't imagine there's anyone really that much better on waivers. Even if you do need to fill a hole, use your second waiver priority on it. And then if you've got any fab budget left at this point in the year, you're dumping everything into Nick Foles. Even if you don't plan on starting him for the pure purpose of removing him from every other potential competitor. All right. Next game, Seth. Let's touch on the matchup of the week, shall we? I mean, everyone's been kind of talking about it for a couple weeks, it seems like. But the Patriots going into Pittsburgh, potential fireworks. I'm going to look up what this over-under is here, but go ahead and give us the breakdown of this matchup. What do you expect? Is there anyone worth sitting in this scenario in terms of this matchup?
No. New England coming off a loss, it's a scary situation to be in. If you're playing Tom Brady this week, God bless you. Good luck. Tom Brady has got to be probably my favorite quarterback this week. Because of the fact that everybody lights up Pittsburgh. I mean, Joe Flacco looked like Joe Montana against Pittsburgh this week. And Tom Brady's a stud. He's coming off probably his second worst game of the season. Maybe the Buffalo game was a little worse. I mean, this game was probably his worst game of the season. And he's going to be motivated. This is for home field advantage. And the Pittsburgh Steelers defense is pretty terrible with the injuries that they've had. So Tom Brady is obviously a must start. Same thing with Big Ben. I think Le'Veon Bell... I do think the Patriots are going to keep Antonio Brown in check a little bit. Obviously, you're starting him regardless, but I think Le'Veon Bell is going to be an animal. I just don't see the Patriots really having an answer for him. They struggled with Kenyon Drake. It seems like they always struggle with running backs that can catch the ball out of the backfield and just running backs in general. So Le'Veon Bell is going to be a stud. The Patriots wide receiver situation is kind of funky. I don't know that I like any of the wide receivers this week. I mean, you probably have to start Brandon Cooks. I would not start Danny Amendola. I would not start, for running backs, I think Deion Lewis, Rex Burkhead, you're probably starting them depending on the league you're in, how deep it is. Gronk,
I'd say so.
Gronk's going to be an animal this week, too. Coming off the one-game suspension, Gronk has two touchdowns. That's my prediction.
Well, and as of right now with Vegas odds, the Patriots is actually favored going into Pittsburgh.
2.5 points, right?
Yeah, a couple points, and the over-under is between 53 and 54. So, yeah, you need to get in a lot of people. But I guess let's touch on the people that you just said were kind of fringe-worthy. I think someone like Martavis Bryant is very fringe-worthy. Like, I guess he's fringe-worthy every week. And to the point of this game is I would still be reluctant throwing in Martavis Bryant.
But I just think that I think the Patriots are just – they're not going to let Antonio Brown beat them. And they also have Le'Veon Bell to deal with that. I think if Pittsburgh wants to try and get the ball to Martavis Bryant, I think they'll have some success. So I think if you own Martavis Bryant – and again, it always comes down to who else you have, but I think you're probably starting Martavis Bryant.
I mean, they scored another 39 points last week, as well as how many they scored the week before, and he's still averaging less than 10 points in PPR. I understand the idea that if they over-allocate resources to one person, but the person I'd like to benefit more than others would be possibly the tight end, Jesse James, because New England has trouble covering tight ends. They have literally no linebackers anymore.
Schuster potentially.
And exactly. And then Juju Schuster, you know, someone who can actually run better routes than Martavis Bryant and catch the ball. So those would be the two that, in terms of being fringe worthy, that I would really like to throw in my lineup. That where every week you might not want to throw Jesse James in. I think this is a good week for that if you're streaming tight ends. And then from New England side, I think Burkhead and Lewis get enough touches where they are a must start because they're going to be able to actually move the ball, unlike this past week. You know, they went 0 for 11 on third down in Miami. We obviously have practically an anomaly there, right? The first time that team's done that since 91. I think those two are good. James White and Danny Amendola, I think, are the two fringe players. I think you still have to start Chris Hogan. And then behind them is the James White, Danny Amendola. If you're looking for the upside and high scoring, I say go for it. But if you have someone with a little bit more guaranteed touches or production, I would still venture to sit both of those players.
All right, let's play a little flex game then. If you had one flex spot, rank these players, just taking these players from this game.
Okay.
Martavis Bryant, Juju Schuster, Rex Burkhead, Deion Lewis. Rank them.
All right. Number one would probably be Juju. Number two would be Burkhead. I really like how much they get the ball to Burkhead, and especially towards the goal line. And then the last two were Lewis and
to Deion Lewis and Rex Burkhead.
Well, I had Juju 1, Burkhead 2.
Yep. Burkhead, Deion Lewis, Schuster, and Martavis Bryant.
Okay. Lewis, then Martavis Bryant.
Yeah, I mean, Schuster had a couple big games, and he didn't really do anything in that Cincinnati game. Then he missed the whole game. I would go... I think this is a good example of if you need points, if you're projected to win, you just want sure points, you got to go Lewis and Burkhead 1-2. And I'd probably go Burkhead because of his, you know, it seems like the Patriots are going to be throwing all over Pittsburgh. So I'm going to go Burkhead. He's the guy in the passing game. Then Deion Lewis because he can do both. And then I'd probably go, I still think I would probably go Martavis Bryant and then Schuster. But it's really close at that point.
Interesting. So I had Juju 1. I definitely hear you on the, like, if you just need guaranteed points, I do agree that, yeah, maybe Burkhead would be 1. But I definitely have Juju ahead of Martavis Bryant for sure. So that's going to be an interesting one to see on how that plays out. Okay, let's head to another game here, Seth. Let's go back to this Saturday slate here. Chargers and Chiefs, we finally saw Kareem Hunt get a decent amount of workload, and what do you know? The Chiefs finally win a game. Los Angeles Chargers defense has actually been playing quite exceptional ever since the bye, and I mean, obviously they shut down Kirk Cousins last week. Who do you like, not like, in this matchup?
I like everybody in this matchup. How can you not love Rivers? Rivers to me is a, I mean, he's got to be a top 3-4 quarterback this week. I mean, I love Brady. I think Brady would absolutely be number one for me. But after that, I just think, I think Philip Rivers has been hotter than any other quarterback in the NFL. I mean, you probably go Big Ben before Rivers, but then I think I might have Rivers as my third quarterback this week. He's just, the guy has been absolutely lights out over the past 5 weeks, and he's got a good matchup. So I think you're going with all the Chargers, Keenan Allen, one of the most, the hottest receivers, right, in all of fantasy. Tyrell Williams blew up. I'm probably fading Tyrell Williams. I don't know about you. I just don't trust him to do this 2 weeks in a row. He always has the, there's always the potential of him doing what he did on Sunday, but he hasn't done it 2 weeks in a row this season. I'm staying away from Tyrell Williams. Same thing with Hunter Henry. I'm hoping I have a better option. If not, I'm fine playing him because tight end is what the tight end position is. It's pretty lousy. On the KC side, I don't love Alex Smith, but I'm also not terrified of starting him if I have to.
Yep, I would agree with Alex Smith in most of your analysis there. I would like this game better if it was in Los Angeles, you know, like the non-kind of home field scenario. One thing that you're going to have to keep an eye on a number of these games, the Chiefs, the Giants, let's go through it here, Buffalo, of course, Pittsburgh, to some degree, those look like they're the main ones. You got to keep an eye on what the weather is. Those are outdoor, cold weather stadiums and cities. And, of course, Cleveland. Hopefully you're not starting anyone in the actual Cleveland game because that looks like an absolutely miserable game for anyone's eyes, Baltimore and Cleveland. Those, especially the Chargers and the Chiefs that we just mentioned, keep an eye on the weather. That's going to have an impact on if you potentially start some of these kind of fringe players like the Tyrell Williams that Seth mentioned.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think I just love Philip Rivers this weekend. And, of course, I traded him to you in one of the leagues that I play you in this week. So I'm sure, you know, another reason why I'm sure that Philip Rivers is going off this weekend.
Yeah, and I know that you're just trying to psych yourself up to believing every little bad thing is going to go bad for you. So, okay, let's keep moving along here. Not a lot of other sexy games, I guess, on the matchups on the slate set this weekend. I think there's going to be some scoring some places, but, you know, where is it going to come from? One of the other higher scoring games is the LA Rams and Seattle Seahawks. Now, this could go two ways. And then it's got a high over-under at 48. I could definitely see this being a little bit of a shootout maybe once the teams open up a little bit. It is in Seattle, so hopefully, you know, the Rams have done a really good job against Russell Wilson. And I think that was one of the worst games that Russell Wilson has had all year was, in fact, when they went to the Rams early in the year. In fact, it was. Besides week one, it looks like Russell Wilson only had around 14 points. But they're at home, high over-under. That being said, the Rams play Russell Wilson really good. Really tough to project what's going to happen, but I could see a low-scoring game or a high-scoring game. What do you think?
I'm going to lean towards high-scoring game. I just think that the Seattle's defense isn't as good as it has been in years past. This isn't a Jeff Fisher coach team. As much grief as we give Jeff Fisher about being terrible offensively, I think there's one thing you can say about Jeff Fisher is he always got his teams up and ready and motivated to play Seattle and give them a really good game, really tough game. So their defense always played well. I think this game is going to be a high-scoring game, I think, because of Seattle's defense and because the Rams seem to just give up points to everybody they play. And I think a lot of people still consider them a solid defense in today's NFL where there is really only one great defense, that being Jacksonville. So I think this is going to be a high-scoring game. And you also factor in the Rams have a really good quarterback. And I think a lot of it hinges on can the Rams put up points, because when you watch Seattle, when teams get up on them and score on them, it forces Seattle to play with urgency. When Seattle plays with a sense of urgency like they did in the fourth quarter against Jacksonville, Russell Wilson can do whatever he wants, and he's got the playmakers to execute. So can the Rams force Seattle to have to get into that mode? If so, this is going to be a really high-scoring game.
The other decently high-scoring over-under at 48 is the Atlanta and Tampa Bay game on Monday night. Neither team has been, you know,
a gross game.
Yeah, it's going to be ugly, right? I mean, two promising teams, but two that just hasn't had their offense entirely click. They haven't looked terrible, you know, necessarily week in and week out, but they're very, you know, sluggish in terms of getting their offense to score, and they turn over the ball. Now, Atlanta is favored on the road going to Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay just somehow allowed, 10 catches to Eric Ebron or something gross. So this could be a Julio game. If you manage to make it this far in the playoffs with Julio not helping you out, you might have an opportunity here with Julio playing Tampa Bay. We saw what, obviously, Eric Ebron did last week, as well as Golden Tate against Tampa Bay. And Tampa Bay's got some pretty nice matchups as well. What do you see happening in this game? What are the key matchups under the radar picks here?
I like both the quarterbacks. I think I might even like Jameis Winston more. I mean, he's really only had a couple bad games this season. I mean, look at his bad games. The New Orleans Saints in Week 9, they're a pretty good defense this year. Carolina Week 8, he had a rough game there. And then in Arizona, which is, you know, isn't always the easiest defense to play against, especially early in the season. But besides that, he's been actually really good. So I like Jameis Winston a lot. You know, I like Matt Ryan, obviously. I think that the running back for, I mean, who projects to be the starter right now? Doug Martin, I'm assuming?
Yep.
I like Doug Martin this game.
Really?
As much as you could ever like Doug Martin.
I mean, another touchdown last week, but managed to squeeze out like 11 points with the touchdown. It was disgusting, again, from Doug Martin.
And teams are running all over Tampa Bay, too. So you got to, especially, I don't know what Kamara's status is. You got to figure.
You mean Freeman?
Oh, wow. Freeman. Yeah, that's what I mean. For some reason, I have the Saints in my mind here. Who knows why? Devontae Freeman, love him this game. Tevin Coleman, you probably have to bench him. Deshaun Watson, benching him. I do like Cameron Brate. When we talk about tight ends and how lousy the tight end position is, Cameron Brate's been pretty good this year with Jameis Winston as quarterback. He didn't do anything last week, but, you know, there's going to be some inconsistency if you don't have one of the top three tight ends. If you don't have one of the top few tight ends, Cameron Brate's a solid play this week. So I think he's, I don't know if I consider him under the radar, but I mean, you know, first game, Jameis Winston, when he returns in week 13 against Green Bay, Cameron Brate gets two touchdowns. So okay. I like Cameron Brate this weekend.
Okay, let's go back to the flex game here with running backs, because you brought up Doug Martin. That got me thinking about a matchup that we just talked about and a player I didn't bring up, which was Mike Davis. I know he got apparently a little bit dinged up. Apparently Seattle hates keeping healthy running backs.
They hate it.
They hate it. But if he is healthy, I like Mike Davis this week. The Rams are the 31st ranked team in terms of allowing points to the running back position. Seattle is
at home. Mike Davis.
Yep.
Love Mike Davis.
So let's start on, you know, the Mike Davis. Obviously, you're starting Mike Davis over Doug Martin, right?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. So we established that. So now let's keep working our way up the food chain here, I suppose. Are you starting Mike Davis or Alfred Morris?
I think if Mike Davis is healthy, I think I'm going Mike Davis.
Okay.
Because he's the only guy in Seattle. Alfred Moore, I mean, Rod Smith had a big week on Sunday, so I think he's going to get more touches. No upside really from Alfred Morris in the passing game. I think you got to go Mike Davis.
Okay, well, Mike Davis, Rod Smith.
I think...
How many more noises do you want to make and blow into the microphone before you give our listeners an answer?
These are some tough questions. I'm buying myself time. If you need upside, you go Rod Smith. If you want to go with the safe option, you go Mike Davis. I mean, I'd probably go Mike Davis. It'd be hard for me to trust Rod Smith in a playoff situation after really only having one good week all year.
I agree.
You know, I don't know how fluky that is. So.
I agree. It's Mike Davis over Rod Smith. Carlos Hyde or Mike Davis?
That's a tough one. I mean, we were talking about this on Sunday that Carlos Hyde is going to finish the year as probably a top 10 fantasy running back, and nobody goes under the radar quite like Carlos Hyde. We never talk about him. I always forget he exists. Playing Tennessee, I'm probably going to go Mike Davis. That's a toss-up. I'm going to go Mike Davis just because how bad the Rams are against the run. And when you watch Mike Davis, I mean, he clearly looks like the best running back we've seen in a Seattle Seahawks uniform since Marshawn Lynch.
Yep. So. And just as a little side note with Carlos Hyde, since Jimmy Garoppolo has been the starting quarterback the last 2 weeks, he's only had 3 catches. Obviously, when Beathard was a quarterback, had to go back in the memory bank for that one.
He's had some big catches. Week 12, he had 7 catches. Week 9, he had 9 catches.
Right, because Beathard couldn't throw the ball downfield, and now we see what the receivers are doing in San Francisco. So you have to just completely erase those reception weeks from Carlos Hyde. I wouldn't say he's only touchdown dependent, but he's a lot more touchdown dependent than he was a few weeks ago. I mean, I still think that they should get him the ball probably out of the backfield a little bit more than they have the last 2 weeks. But with Garoppolo at quarterback, they haven't. Let me bring up a couple more here. Are you going to go with Jonathan Stewart or Mike Davis?
Mike Davis. I'm not really reading too much into what Jonathan Stewart did. And Green Bay is solid against the run. You know, they're more vulnerable against the pass. So I don't look at Green Bay. While their defense isn't great, I think they're okay against the run. I like Mike Davis there. I'm not getting too sucked into the 3 touchdown performance by Jonathan Stewart. I mean, he's been pretty horrendous all year.
Definitely not. He's actually had how many running backs can you say has had multiple weeks with negative points? That's Jonathan Stewart. Before last week, there was only one other game that he had over 10 points, and that was at week 1 of the season. So you got to go Mike Davis there as well. Let me throw out a couple more at you. Orleans Darkwa or Mike Davis?
Mike Davis. Mike Davis.
Okay. Riddick or Mike Davis?
So assuming if Amir Abdullah doesn't play, if he's another, like, essentially a healthy scratch again, like they said he was probably healthy enough to play, but he was a healthy scratch, essentially, I would probably lean towards Theo Riddick. But, and I really say that because Seattle just spreads the ball around so much in terms of their touchdowns. I really don't think Mike Davis is a great bet to get a touchdown. So with that, I'd probably go Theo Riddick, but that's a good one. That's close.
All right. And
who do you go? Theo Riddick. I mean, you got to give your answers here, too.
You know what? I'm actually going Mike Davis because it's very similar to Theo Riddick with a lot of these people we just talked about. The upside with Theo Riddick is his catches has been in the last 2 weeks. Now, I know he's had touchdowns, and that's been helping keeping up his points, but he still only had 9 and 10 carries. 9 and 10 carries with Amir Abdullah being basically a healthy scratch. I'm still going to go Mike Davis. I don't know. I just think
you also gotta wonder Matt Stafford's hand injury. I wonder how much that goes along with the 11 catches that Riggs had over the past 2 weeks, because maybe it's hurting him and he's having trouble throwing the ball down the field, so he's dumping it off to Theo Riddick. I mean, I could be overthinking it, but we're talking about back-to-back weeks with touchdowns for Theo Riddick, and he is, you know, he got 10 carries last week, and he's also putting in 6 catches, so I would probably lean towards Riddick.
10 carries and 2 touchdowns. I mean, keep up that kind of production. Chicago hasn't allowed a rushing touchdown since week 10 against Green Bay. The last time Detroit played them in week 11, they had 20 carries for 57 yards combined as a running back group, which is a nutshell of...
I think you could play... So, yeah, with Mike Davis, though, I'm not going to penalize... At the same time, I'm not going to penalize Theo Riddick for getting touchdowns. I mean, yeah, you got 3 touchdowns. Maybe he won't get 2 touchdowns again, but I'm not going to penalize him for it. Mike Davis hasn't ran the ball into the end zone at all this year. He has 0 touchdowns on the season. And Seattle running backs, ever since Marshawn Lynch, Seattle running backs really haven't had a lot of touchdowns. They don't run the ball in the end zone very often. So, but you, one thing I will say, I play devil's advocate on Mike Davis, is they've played a couple brutal rush defenses the past couple weeks with Jacksonville and Philly. So
Arguably the best two defenses against the run. He's played the last 2 weeks.
Absolutely.
Give me that upside. And I guess it's tough to say because Theo Riddick just had 27 points. But I don't know how.
I just like running backs that catch the ball. I've always liked running backs. Give me the guy who is going to catch 4 or 5 passes and still get some carries in the run game over the guy that's your, you know, traditional first and second down running back that's going to maybe get 15 to 20 carries. I'll take the guy that's going to get the catches.
And I think Mike Davis can get catches. He had 4 catches 2 weeks ago against Philly. And Riddick obviously can catch the ball, but they've been reluctant on giving him the ball until Amir Abdullah was out. So I guess you could say, well, if Amir Abdullah's out, nothing should change on that front. Tough decision there. We'll see what happens. Anyone else that we need to bounce the Mike Davis? Mike Davis, you're obviously going to play over Lamar Miller.
What about Paul Richardson? Because I love Paul Richardson this week. What are your thoughts on Paul Richardson? I mean, if we're talking about a flex situation and Mike Davis is healthy, you're probably going to be starting Mike Davis. But I tell you what, if you're in a, I love Paul Richardson this week. So I'm in a couple leagues where I have him. I'm probably going to be starting him. I think this is going to be a high scoring game. So I kind of want to have as many pieces as possible in this game across all the leagues that I'm in. Hopefully I hit on some. I have Baldwin in one league. I'm going to be starting Paul Richardson a couple. So I don't know. What do you think about Paul Richardson?
I think that I'd start probably Martavis Bryant over him. I think he's kind of in that range where, I mean, let's face it, this is his catches for the last several weeks. 3, 2, 4, 5, 1, 3. So, last week he got a touchdown, a long touchdown. I would probably start a lot of people over him, including Deion Lewis, including Martavis Bryant, and we know where I ranked Martavis Bryant. So, would you start Juju or Paul Richardson since you had Juju last on that list we had?
I'd probably go Paul Richardson.
Interesting.
I mean, my head tells me Schuster, my heart tells me Richardson. I just feel like this is going. I just don't know. The New England game is going to be weird. It's going to be a high scoring game, but it's tough to pick a player on Pittsburgh that's not Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown because they just occupy so much of the oxygen in the room. There's just not a whole lot left over, even if it is a high-scoring game. It's risky, and we've already seen Schuster do complete. I think he had 1 or 2 catches against Cincinnati. I don't know. I'm going Paul Richardson. I think there's going to be some big plays in this game, and Paul Richardson is still the big play guy for Seattle, him and Tyler Lockett. And I know that one of these three receivers is going to absolutely go off, that I just want to – you know, unless you really need the points, again, if you are projected to win and you just don't want a play that's going to kill you, then start Schuster, I guess, because he's going to be playing in the slot in a high-scoring game. He should have a higher floor, I would think. But I think Paul Richardson has more upside.
And Paul Richardson has had one game over 16 points, which he had last week. One game over 16 points. So I don't know how much of a realistic upside he has, is my point. Seattle is... Seattle. It's kind of like Philly. It's kind of like...
This is very, very good point. Seattle is Seattle.
Well, like, as in, it could be Jimmy Graham with 2 touchdowns. It could be Baldwin. It could be Mike Davis running it in for 2. It could be... It's so all over the place.
Jimmy Graham is... He's been getting a lot of touchdowns this year, which has really hurt Baldwin and some of the other players. But when you look at Schuster, I mean, Schuster's really only had... I mean, he had that one big game against Detroit where he had, 193 receiving yards and a touchdown, and he followed it up against Indy with a 20-point fantasy outing. But since then, he's had a couple single-digit weeks, and then he's been injured and banged up, and then he... So, I don't know. I don't think Schuster is by any means a slam dunk. So I think it's close. I would lean towards Paul Richardson, but I don't think either one of these two players are bad stars. I like them both this week.
No, you're right. I mean, Juju's obviously definitely cooled off. And this is us breaking it down right now is just very obvious of how difficult some of these decisions are going to be. Me and you are obviously not agreeing 100%, which is good. Hopefully we can provide some good analysis on both sides for everyone to make a decision on. Let's go ahead and pick a player or two or something like that, Seth, or situation that we want to be a part of, kind of like you mentioned, with as many pieces to a high-scoring game with Seattle. One of the, and I it's not groundbreaking here, but I really like Minnesota to bounce back this week. I think they might go bonkers against Cincinnati. Cincinnati going into Minnesota after Minnesota lost, Cincinnati is not knowing what they're walking into. They're walking into a buzzsaw, and Case Keenum is going to go bonkers. Case Keenum would be extremely high on my start list. Extremely high. I'm gonna list just to put some effect on this to help people out, because extremely high is not good enough here. And for my standards, it's not good enough. I want to be clear. People that I'm going to start over Case Keenum this week would be obviously Tom Brady and Big Ben.
That's it. I would start Rivers over him. I think Dak is super close. I mean, if you had Dak and Case Keenum on your team, you're telling me you'd start Keenum over Dak. Dak has got back on track a little bit.
Extremely close, but Case Keenum at home against Cincinnati, there's no downside. He played even pretty decent last week, or put up an...
What's the downside playing against Oakland? I mean, there's no downside.
The downside is 3 weeks ago, Dak. I don't know. It's nitpicking. Trust me. On that case, it's close.
You can make an argument for Keenum. I mean, I would lean towards... Man, it's not even like... It's so crazy where we're at with Case Keenum, because it's not even like you can say...
Oh, excuse me. I want to... One more. Russell Wilson. I forgot about him.
Oh, you're starting Russell Wilson. Yeah.
Obviously. All right. So Russell Wilson, Tom Brady, Big Ben, then Keenum for me. He's my fourth-ranked quarterback this weekend.
Yep. I think he's right around there. I probably have him in fifth or sixth. But, yeah. I mean, I love the matchup against Cincinnati. Cincinnati always has the reputation of having a pretty good defense. But they're never a defense that really scares you. They're, generally solid, but they're not going to shut anybody down. You're going to be able to move the ball and they're going to give up tons of yards. It's in Minnesota. We saw what Chicago did to Cincinnati. No Adam Jones. He's gone for the year. Not that really should make a huge difference, but they don't have a very good defense to begin with. So I do like Case Keenum, and we've talked about it a million times. He has probably the best group of receivers skill position players, when you go from Diggs to Kyle Rudolph to Thielen, who's a top five fantasy receiver. So not only is Keenum a solid play, he has a ton of upside, which I never imagined would be in the situation going into week 15 saying that Keenum, you have to start him because he has a ton of upside. I never thought I would hear upside and Keenum in the same sentence.
Yeah, and just to your point, Cincinnati is ranked as the 12th best defense against quarterbacks, but when you really look at it, first of all, they got to play Baltimore twice. They've only played them once so far. They've got to play Cleveland twice, which they've already played twice. And then they played Deshaun Watson's first game where they didn't allow any passing touchdowns. They played Buffalo. They played Indianapolis, Jacksonville. Tennessee didn't play that well. Denver late in the season when they weren't doing anything. And even last week against Chicago, Trubisky played really well against them, but the nature of Chicago's offense and John Fox, I mean, they still didn't light up the world. It was only one passing touchdown for 271 yards. So all of those numbers kind of make it look, I guess, prettier on paper, but I would still expect Case Keenum to have a pretty big day.
I would agree with that.
Give me one of your, slam dunks or something.
I mean, we already talked about the Seattle game. I think that goes without saying. I really like Dallas. I like Rod Smith a lot this week. I love Dak. I like everybody on Dallas. Dez, I think if Dez is going to have a big game and you have Dez on your team and you're waiting for him to perform, I think this is the week for him to do it. I like Dallas. And I know that's not exactly, me going out on a limb. But you brought up a good point that Dak 3 weeks ago was a complete disaster. He got me negatives a couple weeks in a row in one of the leagues that we're in. So that's the downside. I just think the upside, we saw this last week with Dak, and now he's playing Oakland. Dallas is starting to click a little bit, and they need to win this to keep their playoff hopes alive. So I want as much of these Dallas players as possible this week. So love Dallas. And then the Seattle, just Russell Wilson, Paul Richardson. I would be comfortable starting Tyler Lockett if I had to. Doug Baldwin, you know, Mike Davis, we love him. I think all over Seattle. Robert Woods, if he comes back too, has to be in your lineup. Cooper Kupp has to be in your lineup. No Richard Sherman. This Seattle defense is not what they were several weeks ago. So, you know, going, you know, most people think, okay, going into the road against Seattle, they got to get scared off by that. You're starting all your Rams players.
I would agree. Start all your Rams
minus
players.
Minus Sammy Watkins, probably.
Always hit Sammy. Just to your, in terms of the three games that Dak struggled when Zeke first went out, in Atlanta, first game, no excuse there. I mean, should have just played a lot better than he did. But then he did play Philly and the Chargers. And the Chargers defense, again, has been playing quite well. And I would say we already talked a lot about him, but we brought him up for good reason. One of my under-the-radar plays this week is definitely Mike Davis. Get him in your lineups. Sit Danny Woodhead. Sit all the people that we talked about. Any other under-the-radar players, even if we just already emphasized them already, Seth?
So you want to keep an eye on Alvin Kamara. Not that you would bench Michael Thomas anyways, but Michael Thomas, it was an animal, and a lot of that had to do with the fact that there was no Kamara. When Kamara's in the game, Breeze is looking to the running backs. On the first drive alone, I think Kamara had three catches before he left the game on the first drive. Then it was all Michael Thomas because Breeze had no Kamara to throw to. So Michael Thomas, to me, if Kamara can't go, Michael Thomas, to me, is probably my number two receiver this week, right behind Antonio Brown. You know, trying to think of it like more of an under the radar.
And to your point here, I'll just jump in real quick. To your point, the Jets don't even have Josh McCown to try and put points up on the board and keep the game close. So they're going up against Bryce Petty in the Superdome. If they get ahead, they're going to try and stick to what has led the Saints to this successful season, which is continue running, especially if Kamara's playing. So expect definitely a big regression game for Michael Thomas.
Yeah, and I would stay away from some of these. Like Tyrell Williams, I would stay away from. I mean, coming off a 20, you know, four catch, 132-yard touchdown performance, I would stay away from him. You know, don't get too caught up in these one-week wonders. Players like Marquise Goodwin, I like him a lot. I mean, I don't know if I like him a lot, but I definitely like him, especially considering his name is Marquise Goodwin. Another one of these players that, you know, I thought was completely done, and now he's rejuvenated with, you know, the addition of Jimmy Garoppolo. So Goodwin is another player that I like. You know, I really like Mohamed Sanu this week. Mohamed Sanu has been really good this year. Probably another one of my favorite wide receivers this week, probably for me, top 15 receiver. So you're starting Sanu.
And really underneath the radar, my last one, not a love situation, but definitely I want to make sure I get points for my running back situation, is Kerwin Williams. Total of 36 carries the last 2 weeks, able to squeak out about 10 points per week. This is probably more of a standard play than anything else, but even if you are in a PPR, and especially if you're in a standard league, with the amount of touches that Kerwin Williams is getting and playing Washington, who is allowed a decent amount of points on the ground, 21st ranked team for giving up points to the running back, you got to like or keep an eye on Kerwin Williams.
And I got a trivia question for you, too. I just was looking this up earlier. Oh. I don't know how interesting this is.
Nothing more I love is to end on a trivia question here.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's kind of relevant because you're talking about fantasy playoffs. You don't want to put a player in. You know, consistency is important. Give me there are two wide receivers in fantasy this year that have only had one single-digit fantasy performance. So every game they played, 10 points or more besides one. They've only had one game under 10 points, whereas all the other receivers have had at least two games in single digits for points.
How many receivers?
There's only two receivers.
So one is one Brown?
Nope, one is not Brown.
Okay. Michael Thomas?
Nope, not Michael Thomas. I'll give you one more guess. We still haven't got either one of them. One is DeAndre Hopkins, and someone needs to tell DeAndre Hopkins that he has been catching balls from Tom Savage and T.J. Yates. Does he realize this? He's not supposed to be doing this.
Larry Fitzgerald or Devontae Adams?
Nope. So Larry Fitzgerald has 4 games in single digits. Davante Adams, nope, not him either. I'll give you one more guess because I'm in a.
I'm sure our listeners are just like begging to give me more options. honestly,
Davante Adams 4 single digit games as well. The other one is Jarvis Landry.
Yeah, I would never have gotten that.
so I don't know how much that, I don't know what that does for anybody, but I thought it was interesting.
Okay, so people that should already be in your lineup are going to be in your lineup. Great, thanks.
Yep.
Well, best of luck to everyone in the semifinals, week 15. We will be back next week, and as promised, we were going to exit Lude with Seth's new song, After You.
I don't want to say I had it. I live in the past and still wonder what happened. I'm holding up, can you imagine? And I know that you're wrong because I know that I'm not. You heard like yesterday, but I won't tell you to stop. Busting for anything cause I don't really care what you're not. I'm gonna miss you like we're oceans apart.
Just wrong, and if you think that you're the only one, hold my hand and take me to.